I'm going to allow you to retain a part of your boss if it doesn't interview. You get a like so that we are able to get responses that we are going to utilize at the end to find the candidates that we are looking for. The other thing that you need to know, the candidates that we are going to appoint, the three of them, two will be having a full-time post, and the other one, the subcommittee made determination because they're filling up a particular period, and therefore you need to know that you shouldn't be surprised once you hear maybe sometimes you are the one who fills up or you are within, so you need to understand that from the onset. I'm going to introduce the members of parliament that are going to interact with you. In the corner there, we've got Honorable Kekane. There's Honorable Davy next to Honorable Kekane. Then there's Honorable Totesi, Honorable Nadisha, Honorable Davis here in this corner. We have a member at back again, that is Honorable Lose. I am Honorable Muloi Moropa, the chairperson for this subcommittee that is conducting this interview. Like I said, I'll need you to just be relaxed. We are engaging in terms of just finding out how far can you take us for us to make this assessment of who then do we put on board for the MDCA board. Okay. My first question that goes to you.
Before you,
who are the other people?
I introduce.
Because I
don't. Okay.
It's an interview. It's only fair. We have to get to understand who are the other people. They must not be candidates.
Okay. We know Justice was is working in Parliament, is our communication spokesperson.
Uruleko Mangwene from PMG.
I am the Vice Parliamentarian for the APC. Just monitoring this committee. Sure.
Right. All right. Thanks for that. Let's pass that one. I'll need you to tell us about yourself. You know, just explain us once we talk about Mr. Buddha, whom are we talking about? Why do that? It will be important for you to relate it to your work experience, the expertise in this area, together with the qualifications that we have, the CV you have in it, that you have explained that you do have. But before you do that, also know that we're having a time period in terms of conducting this interview, and will be 7 questions each member is going to ask, and therefore you must know your time. Cannot pass the given time. We are being interviewed within 45 minutes, and therefore make sure that all these questions, once you answer them, you leave space for others, so that all the members can be able to tap into the knowledge that we have. So for now, if you can just relate to us, who are you, so that you can understand, you know, and sort of relate to the kind of the member we're looking for MDTA. Please.
My name is Yemayo Buddha. I'm working for the Department of Public Transport and Work in the country. I am indeed a manager for stakeholder. I'm also chairing the panel of assessors. I used to work as the assistant director at the social development in the city, and I was once a councillor, I think, in current phase. Maybe I should not disclose which party was represented. I don't think it's important. And our ward councillor there, the doctor of the currently, I am a national deputy chairperson of the National Comrade of Forum, and I'm also chairing the Bonella Development Shaft, which is under the Comrade of Asian called the Rail of Bonella. I also chair the, I used to be the Kailisha Development Forum General Secretary, I think 1997 till 2000. Let me stop this so that I don't Let me also ask one before I sit down. I've studied public management at Center for diploma degree, and I'm still doing my thesis in terms of master, and I should be finishing after next year.
Okay, thanks. Let's also find out your understanding about the area that you're being interviewed in, the media, diversity, and development act again. What is your understanding? Can you elaborate on the act? What does it mean to the kind of work that you will be appointed to as a board member?
I mean to believe that MDDA is meant to assist community and media, whether it's a community television, whether it's a community radio, whether it's a print media. And their main responsibility is to fund, I mean, those community media to make sure that they are capacitated and the skills development and the training that is actually taking place. And they are also advising and training them on the research and to assist to check the question of sustainability to go community radio or community TV or community print media that they are assisting, and to make sure that it's sustainability, they have to come up with grants, they have to make sure that there is monitoring and evaluation to make sure that they are not funding something that does not exist. So the monitoring gets in there to make sure that those community radio, media, TV, television, the government, and they are leaflets and they're owned by the community out there.
Thank you. Next on the list of questions, can I request Honorable Ben to proceed?
Morning, Mr. Good. Tell me, what can you do to ensure that media diversity is nurtured and safeguarded?
As I indicated earlier on, that community media is very much important in our country, because it deals with information that is shared to the community media there, and together with the information that the public is wanting to have. So I think that in order for us to have sustainable community media, we need to assist the community media that are there by providing a training, by providing skills to them, by making sure that we assist them in terms of the advertising, so that they do not rely on the funding that is actually given by MDDA, and make sure that we are also working with the sectors that are responsible for media to make sure that the community radio stations are indeed taking an advantage of training people or nurturing skills of the people that are supposed to be used by the community radio out there.
Thanks, Chief. I want to know two things. One is, how important do you think media literacy and increasingly e-literacy is to quality of leadership in South Africa? And the things that you think MDDA could do to promote that, question. And secondly, how would you describe the media environment in South Africa currently? What are its strengths? What are its weaknesses? Advantages, disadvantages, and where should the media actually go into the future?
I hope that I'm not going to be sitting here and trying to promote community media, but I must advise that the community media is the key, according to my own knowledge, because it speaks direct to people that are on the ground. It speaks direct to the district municipalities that are there, and it does inform communities of what the actuality the government is doing, what is actually happening, you know, within the country. It therefore gives me I'm convinced that the community media is the key, and I would want to compare it with the national broadcast, which is national television, and the papers, you know, the papers that you traditionally cover the country. For example, community media is very important, and community media, whether it's a television or it's a radio, it's a print paper, it is very much important because it does equip residents of the country. Coming to the first question, whether the literacy, you know, it does literacy media or it does help, I think it does, according to my understanding. I can make an example, for instance, and say the electronic media is where illiterate people are benefiting because you don't have to read it, but you are listening over the television, you are listening to the radio. It does assist, I mean, people that are actually illiterate.
Thank you. Honorable Ngozi, can proceed to Honorable Teddy.
My name is Mr. Kuta. Earlier on, you touched a bit the issue of print media. I'm interested in the distinctions between print and electronic media. And do you think they serve a different purpose in society?
Yeah, it is indeed. Let me explain. Electronic media is the radio. Electronic media is the television. And as I'm saying initially that there are people who cannot read and write, and those people are being served by the electronic media because they are listening to it, they're watching to it, they're able to make sense on what is actually happening in the electronic media. Coming to the print media are the papers, and you can keep and take whatever news that are there and put them in the libraries so that you can always, or rather say, our own children can always read and make sense and analyze what is actually happening there. So the difference between the print and the electronic media is the one that I'm actually articulating.
Thanks, Honorable Teddy. Honorable David.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you, Mr. Kuta. My first question is about press freedom. In which instances do you think press freedom could be limited, if ever? And what mechanisms do you think work best to hold the media accountable for its reporting?
My own articulation in relation, to press media, let me start by saying, the media is the one that is supposed to be informing, educating, and doing what and share whatever information to South Africa, and this should not be targeting people with disability, and it should be representing or giving information to the South Africans across the country, and it should be educating the children that you are raising by narrating good stories that need to be heard by the public, and without really repeating myself, it should not be something that is used to interrogate and deal with somebody's integrity or any other South African, but it should be sharing information and giving education to our children. That is my articulation in relation with that. But it should be an independent at the very same time. You know, if there's something that South Africans need to know, it should not be hijacked by the media because, there is no independence. It's ruled by whoever. And it should be independent to me, but at the very same time, it should be informative and educating.
Thanks, Ms. Davis.
And just the second part of the question was, what mechanisms do you think work best to hold the media accountable? That was the second part of that question.
Well, as I'm saying, it's supposed to be independent, and if there is no independence, like for instance, I mean, there must be a body that is going to be monitoring the independence and the independence of the media, and it should be accountable somewhere. And I think, as you are said here, I'm sure you're doing policies, and I think if you can develop a policy that will speak to the independents and make sure that the media is not abusing their power and authority.
Okay, thank you, David. Let's proceed to Honorable Madisha.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Good morning. Look, now, that there are hundreds of thousands of people in a country who steal or misuse monies of the people, but then obviously that there's no. Now, what one would wish to check with you is the low capacity, or what do you think would be your capacity to ensure that the members of the board remain accountable through and through, and the long-term, you know, self-sustainability of the community project is there. How do you protect our people and countries?
I think NTDA is part of government agency, and I think it's supposed to be ruled by the Public Finance Management Act, that is actually responsible in terms of making sure that there is accountability on what we are doing. And I mean to believe that there are some clauses and policies that are supposed to be, you know, ruled and run the NTDA as a government agency. And I think dignity, integrity of the board members that are going to be there are going to be assisting in making sure that we don't get out of our mandate as a board member if I ought to be appointed. And I think that we are supposed to be fighting that money by making sure that there's monitoring and evaluation of what are the projects in terms of projects that are funded by the MTDA. As I articulated on that, sustainability is key, and we have to do our oversight as board to make sure that there are no finances that are abused and are funding something that is not supposed to be funding. There is a proper articulation of projects that are supposed to be funded by MTDA, actually, you know, articulated in the MTDA Act.
Very brief and so on, listening to Jokuta and responding to Honorable Matisha's question, you have touched on KSMA. But if we can get into the details of your understanding of the KSMA, like the understanding of good corporate governance within that context, we've already touched on it, but if you can elaborate more.
I'm not sure whether I've captured the question, but let me attempt and in responding to it, that under KSMA, the policies that are actually articulated in the manner in which we are supposed to be conducting ourselves as public officials, it is articulated in the PFMA. For instance, if we want to procure certain services to some with the route that one is supposed to be following in making sure that you cover what is actually suggested by PFMA. And in terms of something, you need to follow some procedures that are there in terms of procuring whatever services that are needed. And I need to believe that MTDA is not doing those services directly, but is actually giving people or rather companies that are doing that are guided by the PFMA, as I alluded to.
Okay. Honourable members, I believe we have sufficiently covered the scope of what we wanted to ask Mr. Kuda. I can see that Honourable Davis still wants to take some bites. There's Honourable Zotis as well. Okay, in that order. That Honourable Zotis.
No, it's really a big follow-up. Why do you think it's not important to mention the party you represented when you were a councillor? I mean, people voted you on the basis of the idea that you were wrong with telling us what it is.
No, I was still active in politics then, and I'm no longer active in politics now.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Kuta. We had your response, Honorable Davis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say, I mean, that was basically my follow-up, so you can categorically say that you're no longer active in politics. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm Honorable Zotesi.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. You know, we are public representatives, and we are going to be appointed in the NDGA. It is expected of him or her, you know, to make the community aware of the existence of NDGA. And the strategies that will apply to inform the media, I mean the community, about NDGA. So we take it for granted that people know about some of these things, but not everyone knows.
In my introduction, I suggested that I'm the current National Deputy Chairperson of the Community Red Forum. We are leading 136 community radio stations. We are having 126 air community radio stations. And there are interactions between ourselves as a community media, whether it's print or television, their structures. And I may believe that the MDDA is also assisting community radio, community radios across the country. We are taking that responsibility upon ourselves to make sure that it's something that is known, and because it does help. You know, without even doing that, we are just getting help from the community radio stations. Remember, community radio stations are having a listenership of 9.10 million in this country. So we'll be using that platform, Madam Chair, to make sure that MDDA is known.
Thank you very much. Thanks all for indulging us on the questions that we have asked. We also appreciate and very much aware that you're coming for the second time for the MDDA interview. As this subcommittee, we wish you all the best. We're the first candidate, we're still doing evaluation and draw a conclusion at the end once we've actually stated all other, once we've interviewed all other candidates. Is there any question that is pending on your side that you want to ask us?
No.
Thanks for that, and good luck. There it goes, that's the first candidate. And just to get back to you, Honorable Lozi, yeah, I looked at it, it's not 1 billion, it's still 100 because we did not get into 5 and 10. We integrated them within the latter part of the question. So we have to around, 100. Okay, members, we have other forms. We will just do form purposes. Am I confusing? Oh, the issue of... We have finished well on time, meaning that we can be ready for the next candidate. We'll come at 10:45. Do we want to do a sketchy assessment, flowing on top, Honorable Zotesi?
Yeah, if you're going to have the form for each and every candidate, means one has to write the name of the candidate on the form.
That's actually what we are expecting the subcommittee members to do. Otherwise, we might end up losing out who was interviewed and so on. We'll have your notes, we'll have your sheet as well. They're actually developing other questionnaires that have the question that arose from Honorable Daisies as well. Okay. Do we want to do an assessment? Not really. Let's leave it. All right. Okay, let's quickly look into the next coming candidate, and because we'll call him at 10:45.
And can take comments on anything under 2.2.
I think we're ready for the next candidate, I guess. A very good morning, Dr. William, Peter Rowland. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Okay, and Timbaka, can you please put the mic on for Dr. Rowland?
I'll put it on.
Oh, you will.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes. Okay. Welcome and thanks for taking interest in the interviews that we have called upon. You have been nominated and you're with us here. I will request the members to quickly introduce themselves, use their own voice, starting with yourself at the corner, honorable member, so that Dr. Bolin knows who's with him here.
Morning, Doctor. My name is Moss Kate. Moss Kate.
Next member.
Morning. My name is DK Lady Totesi.
Totesi, next member.
Good morning, Doctor. My name is William Adisha. Thank you very much.
Yes, next member.
Good morning, Dr. Rowland. My name is Gavin Davis.
Thank you. And last member? Oh, not last. Second last.
My name is Nissan Jose. I'm of the EFF.
Thank you. I'm Mulwe Mropa,
the chairperson for this subcommittee that is dealing with the interview at the moment, Dr. Roland.
Thank you,
sir. And welcome. Okay, I know you'll be as relaxed as possible because we want to tap into the knowledge that you're bringing here on board. And I'm going to start with my first question. Before I do that, Dr. Roland, the three posts that we are dealing with the interviews, two of them will be full period and one is filling up of a post. A determination will be done by the subcommittee. How then do we spread them across so that we don't get surprised at the end? Three of them. Now getting into our interview, I would really request you to introduce ourselves thoroughly to us in relation to the post as well that you have applied for, your experience and your qualifications, you know, all of them, how are they going to complement the MDTA board that we are interviewing for, and I'll hand over to you. Before I do that, maybe let me just indicate we are interviewing within 45 minutes and all the members have questions to actually ask you. So if you assist in terms of also making sure that you spread your time across, don't disadvantage other questions, make sure that you balance them. But that one we leave it to you. Starting with the first question, your introduction of who you are and you know, your experience, the expectations, over to you.
Thank you very much for those very sensitive introductions. Respect. My education was at the Pioneer School in Worcester, at the School for the Blind. It was a very excellent school. From there, I went qualified as a physiotherapist, but then wanted to change my direction and started studying academically. I was then approached by the Council for the Blind, and that was the beginning of a long career. So most of my former career was as in various positions, but in the end, the CEO of South African National Council for the Blind. And via that, I got involved in disability generally in South Africa and also internationally, ending up as President of World Blind Union and Chairperson of the International Disability Alliance. My education, I had 3 degrees from UNISA, including a master's, and then a doctorate on the University of Cape Town, a doctorate which became a book with the title Being Blind in the World. Later on in my career, I decided that I should have more general involvement, that blind people, disabled people should be also in the mainstream of decision-making and business and the development of this country. I was a disability activist in the 1980s. We aligned ourselves with the liberation struggle that is recognized even right until today. Our people have a very special place in the thinking of government and the political dispensation of this country. So I've often supported various causes, starting from lobbying for certain causes in the Constitution, the Employment Equity Act, and others. I think sort of to diversify so that I've served on various boards. Perhaps most relevant to this would be my role in media. I was on the board of the SABC for 2 terms at the time that it was actually, I think, still flourishing. I represented a disability interest that was part of a consortium that won the license for ETV. We sold that that interest, so no longer have that involvement. We were also the co-founders of Classic FM. These are all initiatives that were business initiatives from the disability community, always with 2 objectives, to have disabled people employed in such enterprises and to generate income for our organizations. I've served on the Housing Board of Tshwane, the Council of the University of Johannesburg, where I've been involved in a number of disability research projects, particularly poverty and disability. I believe my research has given me very deep insight into the poverty of disabled people and many other people in this country. And in terms of print media, I also edited a disability magazine for many years. So these are sort of the things I've done. I've got a particular interest in this enterprise, which I have started to deepen my knowledge, because my perception is that we've still got, a start has been made, a good start in some centres, but we've still got a long way to go to truly democratise and get the diversity participation in community media. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Roland. Just a brief understanding on the Media Development and Diversity Act from your side. You can also, if possible, just relate its strengths and weaknesses.
Yes, I'm not sure that I can claim to have in-depth knowledge to point to strengths and weaknesses, but one of the outcomes has been the Media Development and Diversity Agency, which is there to promote development and diversity of media through community and small commercial projects. There's provision for training, there's provision for resourcing, there's provision for the channeling of funds and grants, but specifically that act is to diversify media in the sense of previously disadvantaged people. And I don't have to remind you that the constituency I've served in many capacities, disability, is part of that group.
Thanks, Dr. Roland. Honorable Keka.
My name is Roland. I just want to know that what can you do to ensure that the media diversity is separate and nurtured? And what strategies can you deploy in the MDDA to ensure both? Thank you.
I think by deepening, first of all, my knowledge of processes and projects, that's how I would start off on a board like that. Even hoping to get some exposure to the successes that we've had. I think those successes, the two that one can point to a degree, is the vernacular publications in the greater municipal areas and community radio, perhaps less so in the other community enterprises. So I think by emphasizing the allocation of funds and the prioritization of the board's work towards areas that have perhaps been less penetrated, less diversified. I think television and print media in certain areas could be examples of that.
Thanks. Honorable
Ndozi. Doctor, I've got two questions. I'll go with the first one, and that has to do with media literacy and increasingly e-literacy, and how you think they're important for equality in terms of citizenship, and the role you think MDDA should play and how it could play that role to promote it.
Yes, we've got certain channels of media that predominate in our community simply because of the reach and the power of those media. That leads to a de-emphasis, I think, in the enjoyment of other media such as print media. Illiteracy has become a very big part of modern culture. The youth, and I'm sure the EFF member will support me here, the youth are very conversant, are users. I think more should be done about this educationally, in terms of parental roles, for blind and disabled people. E-literacy can give access to many sources of information, such as I've utilized to prepare this interview, books, magazines, all of these are accessible via e-media. So it's got an increasing role to play. It is one of the media channels for news, for developmental education, etc., etc. So I think you rightly, I think, point to that as part of the word that should be taken on board by the MDDA as well.
Just a little proceed. Yes.
There was a second question.
Yes. How would you describe the media environment at the moment in South Africa? Its strengths and weaknesses. I mean, as it exists at the community level, and seeing that you have interests and an angle of, which emphasizes the communities of people with disabilities.
Yes.
Could you answer the question in that light, the media environment, its strengths and weaknesses as it exists in communities today in South Africa?
We do have a degree of diverse media, particularly radio, where 25% of radio listenership is today community radio. And radio is, of course, the first choice of electronic media for blind people at this time. Not to say we don't utilize the other. I myself am involved in a recent initiative last year or two to promote audio description on television programming, which is something completely lacking in this country. I think to put the shortcomings is that the English language predominates. What is said in English is taken more seriously, is more influential, and disadvantages expression in the other languages of our country. And when I say other languages, I include sign language, which under the Constitution, that's one of the things we negotiated in 1994-96, one of the languages to be developed in this country, sign language. I was proud on the SABC board to be the person proposing that it be brought into the news, which it is today. So, from the disability perspective, I think bearing in mind that the majority of disabled people come from developing communities, rural communities, bearing in mind that disability is a diverse situation, there are many kinds of disabilities, I think that giving us a voice in media through programming is one way to do it, to enable people to have the means to access the media, and to encourage publication, print literature and electronic publication of the disability voice. Such disability magazines that exist in this country, almost without exception, struggle. I know one editor, a young man, it's very enterprising, he's having some success, but a struggle. I think these are the sort of initiatives from the disability perspective that I will emphasize in this board and in my work elsewhere.
Thanks, Honorable Teddy.
Good morning.
Morning, Dr. Ray. Earlier on, you touched print media. I think you also spoke about the magazine that you have initiated at some stage.
Yes.
I'm interested in the distinction between print and media and electronic media.
Yes.
And do you think they have a different type of in society? Print and electronic media.
That's quite a profound philosophical question. They are overlaps and similarities because the news is put out by electronic media but also by print media. But increasingly print media don't go for the immediacy of the news but for the commentary, the background story, the greater detail, investigative stuff. So I think that's one important distinction. Electronic media today includes broadcasting and other channels of the internet and social media, which disabled people also participate in. Let's say the main line and the well-established print electronic media put out the news, put out entertainment, put out information, but the print media would tend more to give the elaboration, the background, the in-depth investigation. But then each of your social media has a particular audience, a particular following, and can serve quite different purposes, ranging from drawing attention to major and small events immediately when they happen, or limiting to personal information and personal news. One can have a following, one follows others. So the situation is diverse and is ever becoming more diverse. And with these many voices, it's often quite difficult for a blind person to get it all together. One has to develop your own approach, be informed, and to influence thinking if you want to be an opinion maker. Thank you. I hope I've covered the issue.
Honourable Davis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Rowland, I've got two questions. The first is, in what instances do you think press freedom should be limited, if ever? And what mechanisms do you think work best to hold the media accountable for its reporting? Thank you.
I think we had a very interesting extreme example in the Muslim community internationally. The famous cartoons that many people objected to. And the one limitation I would certainly put on press freedom is not ever to offend people in their religion. I think that is wrong. Otherwise, I believe in complete freedom of speech, the balance of opinion via media, so that all voices are heard, certainly all major voices, and through reaction to that, potentially all community voices can be heard. So that's the one limitation I would put on press freedom, never to offend people in their faith. I think there are also certain limits that we as disabled people feel. It is offensive to joke about disability, and we often tease each other and make jokes ourselves, but there is a certain limit that one would not transgress, I feel, to offend people in their disability persons and in their religion are the areas where I think self-discipline to be exercised. Now, I think the second question was what limit should be put on press freedom. Was that the question?
My second question was, what's actually the second part of the question?
Yes.
What mechanisms do you think work best to hold the media accountable for its reporting?
I think freedom of expression itself is a control measure, because then you get the counter use. And then I think self-regulation by the press in terms of its editors' forums, journalism, guidelines. I think it starts with your education for media, for career in media, to get an understanding of freedom, of limits, of mutual respect, humor, all these dimensions. I would say self-regulation and opportunity for response would be two of the ways that one could take care of that in society.
Thanks. Honorable Madisha?
Same, Doctor. I think the one was responded to in a number of areas that you raised. But I just want to raise one other question. From your earlier input, I want to say it is very clear to me that you were either in charge and or, as you put it to us, of course,
yes.
Participated in numerous boards.
Yes.
Okay. Where at your financial appropriation was needed. But as we know, today in the country, there is a very serious misappropriation of the funds,
yes,
that permeate the country,
yes,
etc. Now, what one would want to check with the doctor here is whether the doctor will have the capacity to ensure that the board at which you will serve, if of course you are there, if that board really will be able to take care of this fund, because they belong to the people of our country, they're given the board by parliament, etc. So will you have the capacity?
I think this is one of, I would say, two areas that are most vital in this questioning this morning. The other one is, of course, the diversity itself. The management of the country's resources. I have been very fortunate to have not have encountered that problem on the boards that I've served. The areas I tend to gravitate towards when I'm on the board, because you always get to serve on certain committees, I tend to gravitate towards human resources and finance, because that's at the heart of successful enterprise, that there's money to do your work and that it is well looked after. Now, I noted that this board has had clean or unqualified audits for many years. I don't know what the most recent situation, but certainly for at least 9 years, it was a very good record. I have certain means how I approach this matter as a blind person, as a board member. I have computerized equipment I can use to read documents. Those documents, as financial documents, often are in columns and tables. Then I use sighted reading assistance. And I think I know what question to ask. I think any board in South Africa today has to be probing, take immediate action, and not allow systems and processes to happen around the organization that are open to abuse, that are open to tender fraud and things like that. I think I have the skills and the equipment and the necessary reading support to do that sort of work adequately. And nothing is worse than when resources should go to help developing or proper communities and they're abused. That is racist in South African society. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Dupiti.
Good morning again, Doctor. In the process of you know, the function of the MDGA, I think the main objective of government is to ensure that people know about the MDGA and their services. How we ensure that you know, communities, especially poor communities and those in rural areas, are aware of the existence of MDGA?
Yes. In my perception, this board is not very well managed. My own awareness was limited, and I hope it's now improved in preparation and study I've done. But I think that when, to take the example, when grants are to be made available, when training is to be done, when people are to be recruited for projects and opportunities, one must devise a marketing or publicity program that reaches, if possible, potentially every South African. And I think by taking into account the spread of media and using diverse channels, that message can go out in a better way than is happening at the moment. I can't personally say that I've ever heard calls for allocations for this board. Maybe I'm being unfair, but I think I've got a higher awareness of what goes on in media and the opportunities that are extended to South Africans, and I think there's room to improve the scope of that on the MDDA.
Thank you, honourable members, for all the questions, and thanks, Dr. Rola, for the responses. Now we are at a point where we're finalised. We're asking questions. We will do the evaluation at the end. We are the second candidate for now. We're still going on with this talk. At the end, we will draw to the final, and we'll make sure that we inform you on due time. It won't be very long. It will just be as soon as the interviews are finalized, as you said, there's a need for us to speedily move and deal with the MDGA board. Thanks so much for responding.
Thank you. I feel honored and humbled to be with you, and I hope I can contribute as a practice to the diversity of the board. Thank you.
Thanks, and we wish you all the best. Good luck, Dr. Lenz. Thank you. We're going to, yeah, we will be catching up on time. So it's going to be okay. I'm sure we'll finish it at 12:30.
How about your concern, Jay? Someone, Madrid, he mentioned that he, in terms of qualifications, doctorate qualifications, but when you read the CV, you find out that he is still doing that doctorate. Maybe we need clarity. Thanks.
No, it's like that, we can't clarify it. Possibly, yeah. But thanks for raising that. Why are you breathing, Honorable Lord, so hard?
Thank you.
I'm saying you are supposed to put brackets to say that it's incomplete. Not doctor, because immediately you said under qualifications, you state your qualifications and you start by saying doctoral degree, master's degree, and what. Even if this doctoral is not completed, you don't have it. You
can I rule that possibly we should have put that matter at the end, once we deal with our suffering and all. And also, remember I have raised that, let's leave all these matters, proceed with interview, and if the issues we want to raise, can raise them at the end. So maybe let's do that way. If the issues that we want to emphasize, bring them at the end. Because we don't mean that the guy is not, he's shortlisted this year, he's coming. Let him come, let's interview him. Okay? Can we have Solomon Mugrip coming in? Good morning, Mr. Radikana Solomon Modepe, and welcome. We will be engaging with you in a session of an interview. Ordinarily, we would request you to just be here so that we can tap on the information that you will be giving us. We will be using that information to do an assessment of whom to appoint at the end of the session. If you are the third candidate, you still have many more to come. We will be appointing for three posts. Two of them are full-time, full period, and the other one is a finger of a period. So we're actually saying we're going to make a determination as a subcommittee and whom do we locate where, and therefore you shouldn't be surprised if it happens that you find that one of the tens is not equal as filling up. Okay, and welcome again. Just to start with the session, we would request you to do an introduction of yourself. Just tell us about you in relation to your qualifications as well as the expertise in this area that you're interviewed for. We'll allow you to actually explain that to us. Before you even start, just know that we have only 45 minutes to all of us go through this string of interviews. Possibly, let me spare you a little bit and introduce to you members. They're also going to actually respond within 45 minutes, starting with the question I've already put before you. The members that are going to interview, at the corner there with the red tie, it's Honorable Gekani, and then there's Honorable Zedi, and then next to Honorable Zedi is Honorable Zodesi, and it's Honorable Madisha, and here on this corner with a yellow tie, it's Honorable Davis. We still have a member at the back, Honorable Ngozi. And I am Muloi Moropa during this subcommittee. So, tell us about yourself in detail, and also the background of your qualification, your expertise.
Thank you, Khadija. Thank you, members of the panel. My name is Saul Mosipa. I prefer to be called Saul. The name that you see on the CV, the name that you see on the CV is a real mouthful. writing to Anna Solomon. That's why I prefer to be called Sol. I'm originally from Pretoria, and I have Master of Business Administration, as you be able to pick it up in the CV. I also have a myriad of other certificate courses that includes a grade 12, they call it grade 12 lately, we used to call it grade 10, it's done at 10, and diploma in public relations and communications. I'm currently the senior executive at the South African Poultry Association, responsible mainly for stakeholder relations, lobbying, and in practice, they call me the managing director of the organization, particularly for the broiler section. We have about three organizations within SAPA. SAPA is the South African Poultry Association, and each one of them has got its own managing director, and I'm the managing director for the broiler organization. Broiler organization, as we speak, our members comprise of Rainbow, Astral, CBH, etc., all of whom make almost 49 billion annually. And one is responsible for ensuring that we lobby government, we lobby everyone else who matters in our space. We are currently, for example, busy with AGOA, which I assume all of you are aware of. Busy developing with the senators in America, as you know, they always like the paradox, but we are not going to allow that. That mainly tells you the little bit that one is currently doing at the moment. I have worked for government. I've worked for Department of Cooperative Governance as the chief director, responsible for communications and marketing. At some point, I was the acting deputy director general, responsible for corporate services at the department. And I was there for almost 10 years. And prior to that, I was with the Royal Bafokeng Administration, responsible for communications and marketing. You will pick up from the CV that I'm a journalist through and through. I have worked as a communications specialist at big brands like Telkom, Transnet, BHP, Billiton, etc., all at senior executive level. And that one tells you that I possess all the important competencies that you require from an incumbent for this position. I have strategic capabilities and leadership skills. I have people management and empowerment skills. I have financial change, knowledge, communications skills. And overall, Jefferson, I have, one seldom says this, I have honesty and integrity. That is what the kind of CNC is that one would want from any incumbent in a position. Those are the kind of important elements that one has, and that should count for my experience.
Thank you for that. The Media Development and Diversity Act, would like you to just give us some aspect of that, your understanding on that act, and also maybe you can evaluate if are the witnesses and the strengths that you'd like to talk to on that.
Chairperson, the act clearly stipulates that an environment has to be created that enables HDIs, historically disadvantaged persons and communities in South Africa, around media development and diversity. And furthermore, it is expected that awareness is raised around the MDD. The MDD, I'll use MDD, media diversity, development diversity, and encourage that the previously marginalized
are empowered to ensure that they have a better space in that particular environment, especially in the rural areas like Nelspruit is a modern city. We're talking specifically about Tembisinghani, for example. We're talking about Pojanal district, not necessarily integrating Rustenburg. We're talking about Insikahit in Tofimpala. Those are the kind of areas that one has to specifically target, with the exclusion of Gauteng as well as the Western Cape. And ideally, it is important that people are skilled, especially those who are in interest in small media as well as small commercial media in those particular areas that I've mentioned. This idea that they are given best training possible, and as the ex says, they need to be given the right resources. Some kind of space has to be given to them to ensure that they are able to produce quality programming as well as production on their radios, including the print media. That is what a clearly stipulates. And one would say, I've indicated when I started that I'm a journalist through and through. I've worked for the Sowetan and the City Press and many other newspapers and magazines around the country on a freelance basis. And that should clearly tell you that I have a full understanding and a right background for this particular position.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kekana.
What can you do to ensure that the media diversity is safeguarded and matched? And what strategies can you deploy in MDDA to ensure both? Thank you.
I missed the second question. Yes.
My second question is only to check what which strategies you can deploy to make sure that you deal with safeguarding and nurturing. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Gika. Safeguarding media requires not necessarily any specialized, it does require specialized background as well as expertise. One, you need to put together comprehensive business plans and strategies towards that and ensure that there are policies which exist to guide the MDDA in the application of its work. One has picked up that as much as the MDDA business plan has been nicely and professionally crafted, there are glaring loopholes, not necessarily on the document itself or the content thereof, but the loopholes that exist therein clearly show that MDDA may have lost track with its target audiences, who are previously HDIs, as well as the groups thereof. And it is therefore important that in putting together those kind of comprehensive and idealistic documents, one has to be mindful of clearly defining what the role of the MDDA is to its target audiences. You have to make sure that people have a clear understanding and there is particular awareness of the activities that are supposed to be happening within the space. And it is therefore incumbent upon all the board members, including the operational people, that they come up with comprehensive strategies and policies to ensure that there is strong nurturing and direction going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's proceed, Honorable Ndlozi.
Thank you. Media literacy and e-literacy. How important are they to constitute quality in the citizenry generally? And what do you think, let's say you are now leading the MDP, what is it that you think you would do to promote, I mean, concrete terms, what ideas you would put out there to promote media literacy and e-literacy? In particular, in as far as they have to do with equal citizenship in South Africa. That's the first part. Because I think I can go to the second one so that we finish.
Spare me the time.
Just a short critique of a community media environment in South Africa. Its strengths and weaknesses. And if you have really thought about it, some projections, maybe in the next 5 years or so, where do you see community media going? Okay, thank you.
I thought you'd spare me the trauma. But nonetheless, I think that you understand the background that you are coming from. What I'm saying here around literacy, it is imperative that people have a full understanding of media through and through. One has obsessed over a period, especially since I started working in 1980 as a journalist, that there seems to be some kind of media bias towards the rural communities. And subsequently, people do not have a full understanding of how the media operates. Whether you are in Gauteng or whether you are in Tofimbaba, for example, people in Mashashane have to be given some kind of an idea on how this operates. We have two centers, for example, which are non-functional as we speak. We have community radios which have been established and none of them are functional. We have public and print media in the rural areas which need a little bit of resuscitation and focus, mainly because people in the space do not have access, the necessary access that they should. If there are community radios or print media in that particular, in those particular areas, they do not have an understanding of how, number one, they are produced, who produces them, and why they are produced. And it is therefore important that people are workshopped in one way or the other. There is one or two meetings annually in the rural areas to explain how media functions. You'll pick up that as you do that, there will be quite a lot of students or young people who will show keen interest in journalism or in media in general. And it is therefore important that we start raising awareness towards that. And around the media environment, you talked about the projections and the weaknesses. It goes back to what I said earlier. We need to, the strength that we have a government that is willing to share information with everybody across the board. We have funders who are willing to share their resources and give support towards the media space. And if we have around those, that will work well in our favor. But the weaknesses that one has picked up is that there is a problem currently as we speak with funding, not only with the South African government, but with the funders themselves. They are feeling poverty because of the economic content that has happened. And our weaknesses, as I say, people do not have a keen interest in media, particularly in the rural areas. Now, a few of them have an interest in applying, for example, to send the applications towards the MDDA to establish radios, simply because they have a feeling that their applications may be turned down in one way or the other, and that is the kind of witnesses that one would want to would look at. But if we have a comprehensive and professional boards that are established, not necessarily for MDDA, one will be able to say in 5 years' time there will be a big turnaround, and at least a minimum of 30% of the beneficiaries in the rural spaces will be covered. And as we speak, the numbers are very, very, very minimal, to be honest. Thank you.
Sure. The first thing, Honorable,
print and electronic media, what distinctions do you see between the two? And do you think they serve a different purpose in society? The distinctions, Dr. Zedi, are around the terms themselves, that is print and electronic. But if one would dissect that, I would say all of them have an important space in the beneficiaries that we're talking about. You look at community radio, for example. That is a very powerful media compared to the local print media. There was a question from that Ndlozi earlier where he said literacy. That, in a way, if you listen to the radio, for example, to a commercial radio station, where the language that is spoken on that particular radio is for that particular people in that area, chances of sending your message across is very easy. Unlike through the print media, which will be a bit difficult, especially where we have literacy problems. And literacy and illiteracy problems. So if you make sure that you channel your messages accordingly using the commercial radio, chances are that you are going to cover more space than you would cover with the print media. So that is that, I'm sure, that answers the distinction between the two.
Let's proceed then. Honorable Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Motsepe. I've got two questions. The first one is, in what instances do you think press freedom should be limited, if ever? And the second question is, have you ever been or are you currently politically active? If you have, please tell us which organizations you've been involved in and any positions you currently hold in a political organization, if applicable. Thanks.
The second question, I feel it's not fair that I should answer it. I prefer not to answer that. Suffice to say, Chair, that I'm a journalist. I'm still a journalist even today, even though I'm not actively involved in my career. And that will tell you that I do not exercise. I'm not supposed to take any sides. And I do not have to align myself with any party. Press freedom, Mr. Davis, it's a very debatable issue. And it is important that there are limits. There are limits to it. One would get worried, to be honest, to read stories about the president, for example, or EFF members in the media where journalists have not done any comprehensive research on what they are writing about, and the staff writing sometimes leaves a lot to be desired. There were about 3 retractions this week in the media, and that is solely despicable. That shows that people can be irresponsible sometimes. As much as we do advocate that there should be a freedom, but it should both have its own limits, particularly when facts are that the story thereof is not balanced.
Thank you, Honorable Matisha. Or you wanted to follow up? Let me allow you first.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to the MDDA Act, no office bearer or employee of a political organization can sit on the board. And that's why I ask you that question. So it's a simple yes or no. If you're not currently an office bearer or an employee of a political organization, then you should say no, you're not, and then that's fine.
I'm not.
Thank you.
Okay, let's proceed to Honorable Madisha.
Let me quote one sentence in the opening remarks that is made. You said, quote, I have financial
management
change capabilities. Okay, simply in any way.
No.
Okay.
I lump them together.
Okay.
I said financial management. I would have said financial management, change management, knowledge management. But because I was privy to the fact that it's going to sound repetitive,
yeah,
I prefer to lump them together.
In the mind of it, okay.
Apologies for the
visual. No, that's fine. I had it. But then it's fine. I think I understand that. Now, this basically, in my opinion, includes proper accountability.
Yes.
In respect of the finances. I say this because, you know, the board that you're talking about, something that belongs to all the South Africans, given that the parliament that has got to pay, etc., etc. Now, what I'm looking at is whether you will have the capacity to ensure that the members remain properly accountable. Monies don't just disappear like that. And of course, it has happened in many other areas. And even beyond that particular point, to say, if you can, of course, if you can't, you immigrate. Is there anything that you think can be done in case you are in that kind of realm? Okay. I don't know if you want me to go back and repeat that.
If I understand you,
yes.
The board itself, or MBDA, carries financial responsibilities, and you therefore need to be accountable. Are you accountable? Is that the question? Can you be accountable? Yes, indeed. In the last space that I, as I was outlining the core management competencies that one is, I did indicate that I have integrity and honesty. It's very seldom that people say that with ease where they say it. And that tells you that the accountability that goes with the with what you have asked, I do possess. I've outlined it within that the honesty and integrity thereof. I do understand the PFMA. I have worked in government for 9 years and also in the SOEs for a considerable period. And regulatory frameworks are our finances as well as basically that you understand and clearly are there too.
Understand, I get it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Dodit.
appealing to the status quo of MGTS current situation. Is there any story you can tell about the MGTA, and if not, what is it you can say is not in order, and how will you improve on this? In short, the legacy that you leave MGTA.
There will always be good stories to tell, especially when organizations like MGTA do not come out in the public domain like what we have seen with other state-owned entities. I have perused and looked at their current activities, I've looked at news clips, and there has never been any negative story that one can clearly point out at. But again, that does not say it's all glory at MGTA. What's important for us is to continue sustaining the creation of an enabling environment for the rural communities. And it has come out clearly that people in the outlying areas do not have the understanding of what MGTA is. Even if you can walk into the streets right now and do a quick survey among people in the city center, chances are that people will not be able to tell you what MDDA is. So it is ideal that we start enhancing the profile of the organization and giving it some kind of a strategic direction, which is in short, in one way or the other. I indicated earlier that as much as I have seen and appreciate the beautiful LTF story that is coming out of that MDDA, as well as a strategic plan and a business plan, there does not seem to be any cohesion and direction that one would outrightly say that this is an absolutely beautiful story that one can tell about the MDDA. They need to up their game. They need to go into the communities. They need to talk to government. They need to talk to the funders. They need to talk to everybody who matters to help ensure that they get the right support that is required. As we speak, a few organizations, especially those ones that are listed as partners as well as funders, are not playing their game. Government is not playing their game, I want to believe. I've had a chat with the CEO of GCIS, for example. She painted not a beautiful picture about the active participation of the MGTA. And it is therefore important that people move out of their spaces. Try as much as possible to create a good working environment for staff that seems to be unhappy about their current situation. They want to leave. Most of them want to leave, not necessarily because of the pay, but because of being overworked, because of the lack of capacity that they have. And if those kind of things are going to be given special attention, things are going to change for the better. So MDDA surely can turn over a new leaf. I remember that was indicated earlier that if you are going to give projections, what kind of projections will you give? It may not be an overnight success. It may not turn around over a period. But if it is given some kind of space, it would be ideal that things will change for the better. The most important thing that one has to look at, for example, the nomination process that we are currently sitting on. When you, not necessarily the nomination process, but the people that you are going to be putting on the spot, make sure that you get people with skills who have a full background of media. Do not, if you can, make sure put people who do not have any background on media and how media works in the country. So once you appoint them, make sure that you give them a little bit of perfect induction that will give them a full understanding of the duties and functions that they have been employed for. I'm saying this because those have been some kind of mistakes that the organizations have done when they appointed people into their boards. They employ people without the necessary expertise and necessary skills, and they employ people without giving them the induction that's necessary. And it's always important that the relationship of the board members with management is encouraged. We have a situation with one of the state-owned entities where there seems to be no good relationship, and it should not cascade to organizations like MDDA. We need to run organizations with professionalism, with integrity, with honor, and make sure that we are accountable to, as Ntate Madisha said earlier, to the finances that go with that responsibility. So if we have that kind of a working situation and work environment as board members, that will turn the organization in one way or the other for the better. For example, we need the secretariat who will be able to put together documents on time. If there's going to be a meeting, for example, tomorrow or next week, we need to get documents at least 7 days before time to ensure that we are prepared and ready to discuss issues and tackle them accordingly. That has been the downfall of many boards in the past. And my answer could have been a bit long, but at least I wanted to give a perspective of how things should be done for the betterment of the board when it's appointed.
Okay, can I request if you do a follow-up? It should be within the remaining 2 minutes.
Yeah, me that the government members in the Sovereign Panel, you know, there's the reason for that people want to leave. What could you do to ensure that you go the next mile and ensure that there are some stakeholders around that they are people and ensure that the government can work?
We have funders that have been listed in the strategic intent of the organization. But we do not have to target those ones. We do not have to target the broadcast licenses and government. We have IDs and many other big organizations out there that are willing to put a little bit of a hand into the affairs of organizations such as MDA. And it is therefore important that we start making sure that we craft, as we put together our review, the strategy that is there, we look at ensuring that we include grants and funding from government institutions, organizations, as well as anyone who matter out there. Thank you.
I'm afraid I can see the member wanted to ask, but unfortunately the time that you've allocated to go for this interview, you've taken all of it. There's nothing remaining for us to proceed. But we really thank you. You've used your time efficiently. Thanks for responding positively to these questions that members posed. I just need to conclude by indicating that you are the that candidate that we just interviewed. We still have some few more down the line so that we can sit down and draw a conclusion whom are those that we're bringing on board. But safe to say that we will definitely consider you, Honorable Lozi, breaking the time rule.
We move the time rule. I just want something other for us to be fair for the candidate to just indicate to us.
Don't go into that. Don't go into that, please. It's our issue as well. I can't, Mr. Mosipo, don't be intimidated by anything. There's nothing wrong here. Everything is very straightforward and clear. Anything that members wanted, we clarified everything. So we thank you for all the responses and also getting into details in terms of responding. Thank you very much, and we wish you good luck and all the best.
Thanks, I appreciate that. These opportunities are very hard to come by, and I appreciate that a lot. Thanks a lot, Chair.
All the best. Good luck. So.
Honourable Members, there are three which you can just quickly and turn back. But before we do that, let's have a...
Yes, good day, Advocate Thomas Gwena Ndzewa, and welcome.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Do a quick introduction of the members that will be taking through the session of the interview, and also just indicate to you that we've got 45 minutes to go through the questions that all the members will put. I'm raising this so that you just be aware that... because of all other questions, you don't take one person and disadvantage the rest. You also play around with time so that you can balance all of them. Again, I just need to alert you that the polls that you are interviewing for, the three number, two are for a full period and one is for a filling up, meaning that it's for a period of a member that resigned, so they're not all three of the same period. So, where we are at this point in time, it's where we'll be posing questions. But let's do that immediately after we've done this introduction. In the corner there, we have Honorable Kegan. We've got Honorable Brady. We have Honorable Urtezi. And the name is Tikeledi. That's Urtezi. The name is Tikeledi. And we have Honorable Maidisha. We have Honorable Davis, and I'm Mulu in Europa. So, just to start with our interviews, Advocate Ndzewa, let's just try to find out, let's know who you are. You can give us the details of who you are. Relate that to your qualification, your experience, and expertise in the field. In terms of your introduction to this subcommittee that is interviewing you. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hail from Limpopo. I studied at the University of Limpopo initially, where I qualified in law. And from the University of Limpopo, let me just say that at the university I was involved in student activism through the organization called SASCO, South African Student Organization, Student Congress, which I attribute for most of the things that I achieved because at that university I was part of the Student Representative Council, and it was through the Student Representative Council that one got exposed to work in the heritage sector, particularly starting with doing research on the names of residences that if you visit the University of Limpopo today, you see that the residents named after some of the heroes of our struggle and all that. We were the first, you know, university to do or to recognize some of the heroes of our struggle long before the new government and all that. So we took that challenge up then. But in addition to that, as part of that SOC of the early 90s, we were the first to establish a student, or what we then called Radio Chef. That was our first glimpse of a community media establishment, which was broadcasting outside, you know, the SABC and the official broadcasters of the time. And that, you know, one is not to look back from them. That's why in 2002, in my community of Mulegi in Limpopo, I became part of a group of people who took advantage of the new broadcasting act that ushered in the possibility of community broadcasting to apply for a community radio station, which later became known as Mulegi Community Media. It was launched in 1999, 2000, when the community media was established, but at that time I was not part of the leadership. It was during 2001 that, you know, the leadership that we had put ahead started to behave in unbecoming manner and were actually threatening the existence of the community media itself. So in 2002, I was then elected to serve as the chairperson of the board for the community radio at the time. And, you know, we took it out of a shack where it was broadcasting from. And through the assistance of, among others, the MDA, we were able to finally even build or construct a building where the community radio is broadcasting from. We were able, under leadership, to stabilize the leadership of the board at the time, you know, define the relationship between the broadcast, that is, the workers of the radio, the announcers and all that, and above, came up with clear demarcations, governance. So we introduced good governance to the radio, ensuring that, you know, it was no longer the case that the workers would go unpaid for some months and all that. So we stabilized even the financial management of the station. So I've been the chairperson of that community radio since 2002 to date. We have regular elections every 5 years, and every year conduct we have an AGM, conduct public participation to ensure that people of that area continue to have an impact, an influence on the direction that their radio is taking all the time. So that, in short, is my involvement, you know, beyond other areas of work that I've been involved in. That is my involvement in the community media area. But additional to that, because around 2000, there were a number of, a plethora of radio stations that were, community radio stations that were formed in that area. Some of them, you know, collapsed because maybe of infighting among board members and, you know, greed, people wanting to have all the money that comes into the stations. So we have taken it upon ourselves to assist the community radio stations that survived that period. And we've also been part of the establishment, assisting in the establishment of others in Limpopo. Today, we have about 26 community radio stations in Limpopo, which we are assisting all the time through workshops. I do at times go in to give input into their workshops and all that, and we invite them all the time to our AGMs, which I think in our area in Limpopo, Mulegi is the station that holds regular AGMs. So people from all around the province, Musina, Sibukune and elsewhere, come in to observe how we do things, how we relate to the community, you know, the interaction between the board and the community, the traditional leader of the area, the villages, the community and all that, and other stakeholders like taxi associations and so on. So I can say without fear of contradiction that
as Mulej Community Radio, we have also been catalysts in the formation and sustenance of others around the area of Limpopo. At the moment, we, as a station, and myself in particular, representing my station, of course, we have offered to assist the Limpopo Community Radio Forum to attract adverts from companies, particularly those based in Gauteng, to get adverts for their sustenance, because you would find that given their novice, most of them are not able to attract adverts, and they rely on community connection and all that. So that in itself threatens their sustainability. So as a Mulej Community Radio and through myself, we are doing that right now, going around the companies in Gauteng to encourage them to advertise on the stations in Gauteng. Of course, most of them at the moment still would want to go to the station directly, or that's what they say. But we are encouraging them to come through the Limpopo forum so that, you know, the whatever they do is controlled and managed to the best interest of the community stations in province. Yeah, so
okay, thank you. As long as we still remember, 45 minutes for interview. Let's proceed. Can you give me just a brief understanding of the MDG Act in terms of your knowledge and your, what are the shortfalls, what are the strengths thereof?
Well, the MDGA Act was passed mainly to provide support to community, the alternative media development, which, as we all know, that prior to 1994, we had the dominance of the SABC as the only source of news and all that, and of course the print media. And it was then deemed necessary that communities should have access to, firstly, ownership of their own media organizations, but also access to alternative information as part of the promotion of the right to the freedom of expression, association and information. Now, the NDA was then passed then, and my sense is that maybe because as a community radio ourselves, we benefited from the assistance of the NDA, but I should say that we, as a station, have been having a good working relationship with all the boards of the MDGA, the staff at the MDGA. We've worked with them towards the building of our own building and sustenance of the programs of the station itself. I believe that there is always room for improvement. Though one cannot rightly say that with the Act there may be challenges, but I think the main challenge has been funding, because the agency has not been able to respond positively to requests in most cases for further funding, understanding that funding is never unlimited. But my sense is that the agency has not been very responsive to some of the new needs that they developed for a station like ours and those in Limpopo, which are operating under very adverse conditions. Having now had access to other provinces, I have seen that they are still those community stations and radio stations that would need a lot of capital injection, I guess. I think the agency, from my perspective, is not well positioned to respond to that need for further funding of community media. So my sense is that we may have to look at mobilization of capital to enable this need for local media organizations to thrive.
Thank you. Honorable Kegan.
My question is, one, I just wanted to know that what can you do to ensure that the media diversity is safeguarded and nurtured? and what different strategies you can employ, deploy in the MDDA to ensure growth, to make sure that it's nurtured and safeguarded. I thank you.
The first thing that needs to be done is indeed to make sure that you maintain stability at staff level as a member of the board. Because remember that the board is there to make sure that the assets and the staff at the agency is taken care of. So what I think we'd have to do is to ensure that we continue to recruit adequate and well-qualified personnel who can actually ensure that the policies and the programs of the agency are carried forward, will avoid wastes at all times, and make sure that the projects that we fund as the MDDA are monitored, because there are instances which one has experience of where MDDA would fund a project that would ultimately collapse, and there are many such projects. So you therefore need to put a lot of emphasis on monitoring and evaluation to make sure that whatever money you put in, there is a return on investment. So that for me is very critical if media diversity is to thrive, because you may throw in a lot of money into that area, but if you do not monitor the outcome and the results and the returns of that money, then it's as good as wasted. So my sense is that the emphasis should be on monitoring evaluation of all the projects and ensuring that the staff that you deploy or employ are the best in the market.
Thank you. And Honorable Zoe.
Well, my questions are in two ways. One is how do you think media and electronic literacy are important? In what ways are they important to equal citizenship or the attainment of equal citizenship in South Africa? And what exactly could the MDDA do to assist that? What practical programs? And then, what is your sense of the current status of community media, its weaknesses, and where would it be in the next 5 years? Thank you.
Starting with the current status of community media and where should it be in the next so many years. I think the community medium has not been sort of embraced sufficiently by, in particular, the business community. And you then find that they are not able to attract advertisement from the media. And also, given the fact that they are local institutions and all that, you'd always find that they do not attract the best in terms of people to serve in their boards. Because people who serve in their boards would be either people who are looking at those organizations as sources of employment, and therefore being there also threaten the mirror resources that come into the service station, because they would want to share in that income. Unlike the public broadcaster, which has got the resources and is able to attract the best professionals who know or are assured of their income at the end of the month or at the end of their term. So my sense is that the community media status is threatened by that particular aspect of inability to attract the right people for board participation, that is, at the level of governance, and then ability to adequately advocate for those patients elsewhere, through, be it in the business community and everywhere else. So that for me is a threat to the community media at that level, because they are seen as like charity organizations. So for me, therefore, would be that if organizations, agencies like the Media Development MDDA are improved in terms of funding, you know, some of those kind of problems can be alleviated. Because, for instance, in my station where I am, the board, all of us as board members, have elected not to be paid, you know, not to get any allowance or sitting allowances and all that. But that is not the case in other stations, which, as I said earlier, you find that board members are people who are looking at the station as a source of employment and therefore wanting to have access to the finances of the station. So for me, therefore, the major element would be ability of the stations to attract best people and therefore to go out there in terms of attracting resources and people. Now, the electronic literacy, South Africa is on the continent one of those countries that have made headways in terms of people having access to some electronic communication, cell phones and so on, and therefore people do have, you find that, you know, even in the most remote areas of our country, you would find people have access to cell phones. So I think that therefore the literacy aspect of electronic literacy is taken care of, though we still need more and more of our people having access to internet, to the adequate resources to access internet and all that, you know, functional.
Sorry, can I interrupt? Just one, that we still have five other members, four, who have to ask questions. To be a little bit wide.
So, thanks. I think, just to conclude, you know, making it possible for establishment of electronic cafes elsewhere, that is, wherever there's a community registration, that there be access to internet for young people in the area, is one of the challenges that I think has to be addressed.
Thank you. Can we proceed, Honorable Lozi? Oh, yes. Thanks. Let's go to Honorable Zedi.
My name is print and electronic media, what distinctions do you see between the two, and do you think they serve a different purpose in that?
Well, I think they do not serve very different purposes, because and their purpose is to inform the public. So they do serve the same purpose, I mean, same public and same purpose, which is to inform. I think that's why the need for promotion of both, because you know, you need to also, as you promote this forms of media, also look at the ability to promote written word, to encourage people to read and write, because that's one of the objectives of the MDA as it is. Electronic media, of course, it's I mean, your broadcasting and other, you know, say internet and all that. These are areas that, you know, enable, I mean, today's economy is electronically based, so we have to encourage our people and empower them to be able to participate in the mainstream economy through the electronic media.
Thank you. Honorable David.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good morning to you, Mr. Advocate, Advocate Zua. According to the MDDA Act, board members need to be impartial, and they can't hold office in a political organization. From your social media profile, you still seem to be active politically in the ANC, even working for them during the elections. Can you tell us if this, whether or not you believe this casts doubt on your eligibility for the position? That's the first question. The second question, as you said, you are still the chairperson of Molesi FM. Given that the MDDA funds community radio stations,
and this radio station has also received funding from the NDDA. How would you manage this potential conflict of interest if you were appointed to the board? Thank you.
I think my membership of the NC is a right that every citizen of the country has in terms of belonging to a political organization. So one should, you know, and being a member of the NC does not automatically mean that you are not able to know what is right and what is wrong when it comes to areas where you have to serve impartially. So for me, therefore, my membership and working for the NC, for me, does not constitute a conflict, because I would always be able to know, you know, I would always be able to know what is wrong and what is right, and distinguish between what is fair and what is unfair. And in my years as a chairman of the station, I always knew that we cannot use our community radio station to pursue narrow party political interest. You know, we always allow the station, even ourselves as active members of the political organization, always allowed the station to operate independently of our views as station. So coming into the station, we always pursued what is in the best interest of the community and without political favor or bias. Now, regarding the continued participation in the Malaysian Community Radio, my sense is that if appointed to the board, I will have to relinquish my participation in the station. That's my sense. So that, you know, even though I know that whatever I do will not necessarily, I will not be biased in favor of my station, but you see, you need to be seen to be unbiased, even though you yourself know that you are not biased. So I suspect that I may have to relinquish my chairpersonship of the board in order to serve the broader suburban public than the narrow local where I am.
Thank you. Honorable Madisha.
No, thanks, Comrade. To refer to the Father Code, the word that you, you said that one of the things that you had been doing, is monitoring of funding and wastage evaluation, etc. Okay? Which then says that this is one of the policy directions which are there, which of course we are aware of. And obviously there are many more other policies which I wish to suspect. You know. Now, what one would want to understand is that given the existence of the policies which are there, which have got to be followed, you still have or will have members of the board who will get out of the way, waste money, etc., or do things which are wrong insofar as the finances are concerned, and these are the finances of the country, because they have been supplied by Parliament, etc. Would you be able to deal with that?
You know, the King Code 3, which has now been codified into law, company law, and all the many other laws which requires that they be board members and so on, has sort of clarified what members of the board have to, how they have to behave, making sure that, you know, whatever they do, the organization that they serve should actually take precedence in terms of the interest. There shouldn't be conflict of interest, and there should be the fiduciary duty that board members are expected to behave or live by. Now, as a board member myself, I would ensure that, or strive to ensure that the other board members live by that code. As the Act says, you have to ensure that where there is you know, failed, when we're failing to ensure that some of the prescriptions that the law has given to you, when you're failing, you have to ensure that the executive authority is informed of such failures. So you have to blow the whistle if, you know, you realize that the tide is against you in terms of ensuring that people behave in terms of the code and all that. But I should say that I expect that this committee, this panel that is here, will do its best to screen those that get appointed ultimately to serve in this board, you know, to avoid such kind of behavior, understanding fully well that, you know, people, human beings are unpredictable. They may see this way and act differently. But we hope and believe that those that the panel will ultimately select, will, which have gone through the narrowest of hopes that we can imagine. So we hope that they will behave accordingly. So to ensure that the policies, the monitoring and avoiding wastage, you know, those policies are carried out.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Zogis.
In response to members' question, you emphasized a lot on the importance of recruiting the best personnel. In your opinion, what would be the benchmark of righteousness? Or the best, you said the best.
Well, I think, you know, the starting point, obviously, is your academic exposure to the area that you want to work in. Second would be exposure itself to the work environment, because, you know, you may find that people do have the qualifications in terms of university or, let's say, post-matric qualifications, but they may not have the right exposure to work. So you have to recognize prior learning through work experience and all that. So those are some of the combinations that you would want to merge and ultimately produce a better worker. But I think you also need to look at the work ethic. The kind of people you recruit should have that kind of commitment to the country in the first place, you know, to ensuring that the country survives, the country thrives. So it should be that patriotism to want to see the country surviving and becoming the best in the world. So for me, therefore, commitment, experience, knowledge would contribute or constitute part of what I would characterize as the best employees. So, of course, you know, no one is born with the knowledge, which then requires that the MDDA, particularly as a training organization, should also look internally to ensure that the staff that it attracts are, you know, engaged in continuous learning so that they can improve. Because obviously, given where we come from as a country, you may set the standard of the bar as high as I have set it, but only to find that you're not able to find the ideal best candidate. So you have to yourself also look at the possibility of producing such and honing the skills to the level that you prefer ultimately, or to the level that will take the MDDA forward.
Honourable Member, are there any follow-ups that you'd like to do? I think, you know, you managed to then advocate and so to then sort of move through all the questions, and you managed to even detail all, and we really want to thank you for that, for giving us a full-fledged response. As you might know, that we're still proceeding with our interviews for today and tomorrow. After we've interviewed everyone else, we then are going to sit as the subcommittee and do an assessment. I did indicate that it's repost to you.
two of the post full time and one will be filling up a period, and therefore we will make a determination as a subcommittee in terms of how do we allocate them amongst those that are going to appoint. We want to really thank you very much and wish you all the best. Good luck.
I think we can take last candidate. Are you two? Are you there? Let's just proceed to last candidate, then have lunch, then. They're all here. Yes, with pleasure.